the Power Pack Morning Zoo. Are you kidding me?
Fire!
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Good morning and welcome.
Dan Mickley.
Oh my God, he's from Chicago. That's amazing.
Vince Marotta.
Oh, why, Vince? Who's better than Vince?
Sarah Cazell. And Jerry Carlin. It can only be Sarah. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Mickley and Marotta Mornings.
Shout out to Dan Mickley, my boy. Him and Vince. Okay.
Good morning, happy Wednesday, and Ass Dragon Wednesday. If you're Jared Carlin, I could see it in his gait this morning. But Vinny and I, we are well refreshed. Vinny and I both turned down offers, free tickets to see the Rolling Stones last night, because we are the epitome of commitment and dedication.
That, in a way, made me feel worse about myself, though.
Why?
Because they're all 75 years old and they're staying up late.
And they're staying up late.
Mick
yeah.
Jagger's still
yeah.
shaking it.
Would you guys have gone if it was a Friday or Saturday night?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, I would. And I realize that I've squandered now an opportunity to see the Rolling Stones live ever.
Mm-hmm.
This is it, right? This is their ninth and final farewell tour.
Third, they all say that, Vinny. They never are going to stop.
They're
going to
team up with Kiss on a tour next summer.
Gene Simmons. From Kiss.
Kiss.
This blew my mind. So looking over the set list from the Rolling Stones last night, you know their song, It's Only Rock and Roll, But I Like It?
Yeah.
Fairly famous song, right?
Mm-hmm.
Last night was the first time they played that live since 2021. Imagine having a catalog of hits so deep that you could leave a song like that on the table for 3 years. She's So Cold, another good song off of, what was that? I forget what album it was. That's the first time since 2019 they played that song. It's just, yeah.
Emotional Rescue.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's good.
If you've been touring essentially nonstop for 60 years,
mm-hmm.
you probably get tired of playing certain songs and stuff, or you want to work in. They probably do a lot of cover stuff, too. At this stage.
You know what I think they do? What I think they don't do, Jarrett, they don't play 3.5-hour shows.
Oh, that's probably fair, too.
That's what I think it is. This is not like a Springsteen show where you're... It's
right.
not like a Taylor Swift
Pearl Jam.
Show. Pearl Jam, where you're just getting hours and hours and hours of music. So I think that's kind of the deal. But still, what a remarkable deal. I saw a thing 5 years ago of Mick Jagger working out in a dance studio, practicing his onstage moves. At age 75, he was in better shape than... it's just crazy.
He was bopping around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this... I understand it was a weeknight. I probably would have turned it down too.
Mm-hmm.
But this might have been your last chance to see Mick Jagger live and Keith Richards almost alive.
We've been saying that since the 80s.
No, you're right. But again, as I started, that is a symbol of the dedication and commitment. Of Vinny and me.
Yeah. I'm
going to say that enough until people actually believe it.
I got the invitation and I thought about it and I'm like, okay. If the show starts at 8, I don't know who... Do we know who opened? I don't even know who opened.
I don't either.
Setlist.fm says they went on stage at 9:20.
Oh! Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's already
bedtime. Yeah, way past bedtime.
I think their opening act was Mick's grandson, who was 48.
There's a great line in the movie Almost Famous,
mm-hmm.
which was set in the... I guess that was the early set, 73, I think it was set.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Fallon gets brought in as a new tour manager for the band Stillwater. And he's like, we got to take care of this stuff now. If you think Mick Jagger is going to be out there running around on stage when he's 50 years old, you're sorely mistaken.
That's funny. That's pretty good.
25 years later, still going.
Still going. Yeah. All right. So there you go. Start the show, Jarrett.
The Splash.
Splash.
The stories making waves in the sports world.
The Splash.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Corbin Carroll was back in the leadoff spot, and it seemed to agree with him. The reigning National League Rookie of the Year went 2-for-5 with a 3-run homer, drove in 5 as the D-backs topped Cincinnati 6-2 at Great American Ballpark. Zach Gallen was on the mound for the first time in nearly 2 weeks. Didn't show any rust at all, allowed just one hit, in 6 shutout innings, an efficient 79-pitch outing. D-backs get a win in the opener of a series for the first time since opening day when they stomped Colorado by 15 runs. That series continues today at Great American Ballpark. Right-hander Graham Ashcraft goes for Cincinnati against D-backs lefty Jordan Montgomery, 3:40 first pitch. Pregame starts at 3 on Arizona Sports on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app. Good win for the D-backs.
Very much so. Good night for Corbin Carroll. Good night for Torrey Lovello, putting him back at the top of the lineup. Pretty good return for Paul Sewald.
Just to get him back out there.
Exactly.
And to be able to do that in a very low-pressure situation. Yes, he gave up the home run in the ninth, but, just to get him out there again and geared up. I didn't want Paul Sewald to be put in a high-leverage situation his first time
out. That's a good point.
Before Tuesday's opener, the latest twist on the D-backs injury front, they activated closer Paul Sewald from the injured list. They optioned right-handed pitcher Scott McGuff to AAA, and there was an update on outfielder Alec Thomas's condition. He felt more discomfort in his hamstring and was sent back to Phoenix for more evaluation.
Thomas has
been out since straining his hamstring on March 31st in the D-backs' fourth game of the year. He had played 3 games with Reno on a rehab assignment, drove in 5 runs while with the Aces. They're treating this as very minor and more concern than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Overabundance of caution.
We always say hamstrings are a tricky thing.
Yes. They are. For a lot of people. Professional athletes and hamstrings.
Yeah.
It's crazy. They're in the best shape of their lives and could just.
And that's probably like why.
Yep.
They're like a guitar that's tuned really tight.
Yeah.
Twang.
Last night in the NBA playoffs, the Boston Celtics had little problem with the Cleveland Cavaliers. They notched a 120-95 game one win in their Eastern semifinal. Jaylen Brown led the way with 32 points. Derek White, 7 3-pointers and scored 25 for Boston. Then it was Oklahoma City cruising past Dallas, 117-95 in their game one. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at 29. 9 rebounds and 9 assists for the Thunder, who had 7 players hit at least 2 3-pointers. They lead that series 1-0. Tonight on the playoff docket, Game 2, Pacers-Knicks. New York guard Jalen Brunson looking to become only the 2nd player in history to score 40 or more points in 5 straight playoff games. Brunson had 43 in a thrilling Game 1 win for the Knicks on Monday. Tonight's game gets rolling at 5 on TNT. Knicks even more shorthanded, losing another player due to injury. Mitchell Robinson out 6 to 8 weeks with a stress injury to his left ankle. Knicks already without Julius Randle and Bojan Bogdanovic. Everybody's playing 48 minutes tonight.
Yeah, the
Knicks. Tibbs wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, you wonder how much longer the Knicks can sustain this.
Yeah. Jamal Murray of the Nuggets avoided suspension but has been fined $100,000 for throwing multiple objects on the court during Denver's Game 2 loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves. That lack of a suspension caused a lot of reaction from people.
Yeah,
we're going to get into it today. Yep, Rudy Gobert of the Minnesota Timberwolves once again named the Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA. 72 of 99 first place votes went to Gobert to win the award, which is now known as the Hakeem Olajuwon Trophy. He wins it for the 4th time, only the 3rd player ever to do that, joining Dikembe Mutombo and Ben Wallace. Victor Wembanyama of San Antonio finished 2nd. Bam Adebayo of Miami was 3rd. The league MVP will be announced later today. Denver's Nikola Jokic expected to win the award for the 3rd time. Dallas's Luka Doncic and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of the Thunder, the other finalists.
It's named the Hakeem Olajuwon Award, the defensive player, despite 3 players you just named that have won it more than him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you think they're really going to call it the Ben Wallace Award?
Well.
According to reports, the Arizona Cardinals got a visit from free agent receiver Zay Jones on Tuesday. Jones was released by the Jaguars after the draft. He's looking for a new home. Played just 9 games with the Jags last season as he dealt with a posterior cruciate ligament injury in his right leg suffered in a Week 2 game against Kansas City. Jones also visited Tennessee on Monday, but the Titans opted to sign wide receiver Tyler Boyd to a 1-year deal. $4.5 million he had spent the first 8 years of his career with Cincinnati. Bengals have also signed former Bengals linebacker Marcus Bailey to a 1-year deal. He spent 4 seasons with the Bengals, mostly as a special teamer. 10 tackles last year, only 29 snaps played on the defensive side of the ball. Other reports from Tuesday indicated the Cardinals have extended a rookie minicamp invitation to quarterback Taulia Tagovailoa, the younger brother of Tua Tagovailoa. Taulia went undrafted out last month out of Maryland, where he threw for over 11,000 yards in 4 seasons. By the way, rookie workouts begin Friday, run through Sunday.
Tua Tagovailoa.
Thank you, Rod. Arizona basketball picks up a transfer. They land former Campbell standout Anthony Del Orso, the Australian who averaged 19 points per game last year, but he's also testing his NBA draft prospects. The Mercury got ripped in their preseason opener in Seattle by the Storm, 85-59. Nobody played more than 17 minutes for Phoenix. Diana Taurasi had 10 points in her 15 minutes of action. NHL playoffs, couple of overtime thrillers last night. Vincent Trocheck scored the game winner 7-24 into the second overtime, lifting the Rangers to a 4-3 win over Carolina. They lead that series 2-0. Colorado comes back from a 3-0 deficit to beat Dallas on Miles Wood's overtime goal, 4-3 Avs. They take game one in that series. I was thinking about this last night.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, the Rangers, that crowd was electric at Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, the Knicks are going for a 2-0 series lead. What a great time to be a sports fan in New York right now.
And especially with that building and what that building means in New York. Yeah. Yes. No doubt about it. And they've gone through a lot of lean years, both of them, respectively.
Yeah. Not as many the lean years, but Bruins and Celtics also. Same building, same.
True. People thought that now that Coyotes have left Arizona, they were going to win the NHL draft lottery last night in Utah. They didn't. The San Jose Sharks get the number one pick. Chicago will pick second, Anaheim third. They're holding the draft at the Sphere in Vegas this year. And Arizona beat ASU in baseball 5-3 at Phoenix Muni. The two teams split 4 regular season games this year. Jam-packed Splash this morning.
Look at that.
Wednesday, May 8th. Coming up next, to quote the great Ted Knight from Caddyshack, well, we're waiting.
We're waiting.
Still nothing on the Frank Vogel front with the Phoenix Suns. What is going on? We'll explore next. Bickley and Murata mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Wolf. Does the freaky Mike Hazen think Corbin Carroll is turning a corner? We'll ask the D-backs GM at 11:45. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
Do people in the league say that? Yes, they do. I talked to multiple people who think that's what they're going to have to do. Do the Suns say that? No, they do not. I think the Suns' intention is to keep all three of these star players, tweak the roster, tweak some of their systems and their processes, and try to be better next year. And Durant, not that he is, sworn to telling the whole truth all the time. Durant, when he left, basically said, I think continuity is valuable. He was looking at the Timberwolves team that had basically brought their entire team back from last year, and he's like, that continuity is pretty important there.
It's Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider. He was on the Rich Eisen show earlier this week talking about maybe what could be the Suns' plan, which we've talked about a lot. Do they have a choice in this plan? They certainly don't have the same flexibility other teams do going into this offseason. We'll get to the roster stuff. What about this coach stuff?
Yeah.
There has been a cloud over this franchise since they got eliminated from the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
which now was over a week and a half ago. Thought it might be a quick move. They've taken their time to evaluate things. That led up to last Wednesday's press conference. That was already a week ago now, Bick.
Right.
Where, Matt Ishbia basically said, I haven't talked to anybody yet. You wonder what's going on. You wonder from, just the standpoint direction of the franchise, but also now put yourself in Frank Vogel's shoes, a guy who's under contract for next year.
Right.
And there's been all these reports of, well, they're going to make a determination soon. What are you waiting for?
That's a great question. So, because how much of a fact-finding mission do you really need to embark upon if you're already a very invested owner who has been involved in a lot of the decision-making?
Yeah, I mean, we went through that. The Cardinals went through that
mm-hmm.
after 2018 with mm-hmm. Steve Wilks, where he was under contract as a first-year head coach. The season did not go well. He was asked to pinpoint a plan of, direction of the franchise moving
right.
forward. And the brass said, we're not on board with that.
Yeah.
Thanks for your service. We're moving on. I wonder if there's a similar process going on. Now, the Suns were not as bad this year as the Cardinals were in 2018,
mm-hmm.
but a bigger disappointment. Considering what they had
without
at
a doubt,
their disposal.
Without a doubt. So we know that during the season, very frequently, Matt Ishbia and Frank Vogel would have conversations. Frank Vogel has talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, from day one to the very end, has been very consistent in characterizing Matt Ishbia as very supportive, even through the worst of times.
Literally to the very end.
Literally to the very end. Literally to him saying to the media, yes, I expect to be back, and I expect to be back because the owner has told me he's got confidence in me. And blah. Okay, so I think that if Matt Ishbia has heard from Frank Vogel on the daily or after, you know, at most games, if he happens to be in town, then Matt Ishbia is very familiar with the arc of the season and mm-hmm. things that went wrong and things that bothered the coach and maybe moments when the coach was not received well, when his players didn't accept the coaching. So I think going into the weekend, I think Matt Ishbia has a real clear picture of what he thinks of Frank Vogel. And I think it's fairly clear to everybody that he does not want to fire Frank Vogel. Because if you want to, if you're an owner and you want to fire your, if you're pissed at your head coach and you want to fire him, you do it the day after the season yes. ends because you want to make it known he is the problem. Or you're just being petty and you want him to suffer a little bit like he made you suffer as the owner of the team. This is how sports works. So for this to go and go and go really strongly suggests that Matt Ishbia believes in Frank Vogel. So then what is going on? Well, I don't think it takes Sherlock Holmes to figure out what is going on. Is they're trying to assess, okay, if we do say that Frank Vogel's coming back, what are we getting from our key players? Mm-hmm. Because if they don't buy in a second time, and if we can't make this something where they buy in, then we're really going to look stupid.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe that's what this process is. Maybe it's hard to wrangle everybody together once they go their separate ways for the summer. Look, I don't know what NBA coaches do when the season is over. We know mm-hmm. what the players do.
Oh, they
yeah. find somewhere they with sand out. And water.
Right, but an owner like Matt Ishbia also has his own jet, and he can go anywhere. At a minute's notice. And so you would hope that if in matters like this, at the very least, Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, whether they're in Turks and Caicos or whether they're in Timbuktu, would say, sure, I got a couple hours tomorrow. If you want to fly on out, come on. We'll sit down and we'll talk. And so for this still not to have any resolution tells me that something's wonky on the player end. And clearly to me, it's either Book, KD, or both. That's what it looks like to me.
Well, I mean, it's fair to start there. Those are the focal points of this team.
Mm-hmm.
On the subject of continuity, which we played that soundbite from Brian Windhorst, and he said Kevin Durant talked about the importance of continuity. We all know that that's the case too. But here was more from Brian Windhorst's visit with Rich Eisen on that subject of continuity and who that onus falls on.
That said, in a player like Durant's case, that's not up to them. That's up to the team. It's up to the player. It's always up to the player. And so if Durant had a change of heart, which we've seen in the past, then that would potentially be on the table. But he didn't say that. He didn't sound like that, and it doesn't sound like that's what the team wants. And if your point is that you don't think they're going to be able to materially change their roster without doing something like that, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I don't think it's something that they're, as we sit here in the first week of May, not saying that's something that we should expect.
There is so much going on in terms of amateur general managers out there now who basically want to attach every single player to the Phoenix Suns. Can we remember again the limitations that they are under? This roster will look a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen basically the Sun, you know, photoshops of almost every player who's not playing in the playoffs right now in a Suns uniform for next year. Tobias Harris, James Harden, Russell Westbrook. They have limitations. Not everybody's going to sign up to take a minimum contract from the Phoenix Suns.
Oh, no, especially after last year, especially after seeing how this looked and worked and or didn't work. Yeah, no, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think that there's some real limitations to what they can yes. do to add to this team. They're gonna have to really get lucky in finding the right kind of pieces.
Yeah, and the Phoenix Suns don't need another alpha ball dominant score first player, regardless of position.
No, that is not what they need. Yeah, no. Listen, that to me would announce that this regime has no clue what they're doing. If they think that James Harden is what's going to unlock this, adding another aging, ball-dominant, unathletic scorer, Jared said this earlier, and he's absolutely right. You watch these playoffs, the Suns, of the laundry list of things they are lacking, and it's a list.
Yeah.
Athleticism is one of the most underrated items on that list. Because even Bradley Beal, I thought, was more explosive than he showed last year. And I know he dealt with issues. Devin Booker, not the most athletic guy. Kevin Durant, 35 years old, is a big. And he's coming down the backside of that mountain. Where's the quick twitch? Where is the pop? That, to me, I don't know how you're going to find that.
Yeah. It's a challenge, no doubt. You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, a change in the lineup. Does the Diamondbacks well in Cincinnati? We'll tell you more about it in D-backs Daily. Straight ahead, Bickley and Marotta mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball. D-backs Daily.
Yeah, D-backs starting a six-game road trip in Cincinnati against the reeling Reds. They'd have Zach Gallen on the mound to try to get the series started in the right direction. He'd be opposed by Cincinnati right-hander Frankie Montas. Scoreless through two, it would be the D-backs breaking through first in the top of the third inning. Jake McCarthy drew a walk, took third on a Tucker Barnhart single. Runners on the corners, nobody out. Kevin Newman would make the first out by popping out to first base. That brought up Corbin Carroll.
And now Montas throws, breaking ball, weakly hit back to the pitcher, throws to second for one. That's the only out they'll get as McCarthy scores. And RBI fielder's choice by Carroll. It's 1-0 Diamondbacks.
Yes, Chris Garagiola saying that the fielder's choice does count as an RBI for Carroll. Snakes out in front, 1-0. Gallen, who was making his first start in 12 days, was on his game. He allowed a leadoff single in the second to Jake Fraley, but immediately induced a double play ground out from Christian Encarnacion Strand, who's got the longest last name in the history of Major League Baseball. D-backs would add to the scoreboard in their half of the fifth inning with one out. Barnhart reached on an error by shortstop Ellie De La Cruz. Kevin Newman followed with a single, and that brought up Corbin Carroll again.
Here's the 0-1. Swing and a ground ball. That's into center field, a base hit. Barnhart giving the wave around third. Newman on his way to third as Barnhart scores. And the RBI knock from Carroll doubles the Diamondback lead.
Yeah, both runs courtesy of Carroll. 2-0. Gallen finished six innings. He allowed just that one hit. He struck out six and walked three. D-backs weren't finished with the bats, however. In the seventh, working against Justin Wilson, I guarantee, who came in for Montas. That's a really old reference, sorry. Randall Grichuk led off with a single. Tucker Barnhart tried to bunt him over. The Reds were able to get the lead runner for the first out. Newman singled again, sending Barnhart to third for Carroll.
Here comes. Swing and a high fly ball deep left center field. That's going towards the gap. That's going over the wall and gone. Three-run home run for Carroll as he continues to dominate Cincinnati. Second homer of the season, and it's 5-0 Diamondbacks.
Yeah, first home run for Carroll since April 9th. As you heard, Chris Garagiola say only his second on the year.
Yeah.
Three-run shot, five-run lead at that point. One batter later, Ketel Marte said, I want in on that action.
Now this one barreled. That's deep to center field. Did Marte go back to back? Yes, sir. Into the bullpen, gone. Seventh of the year. It's now 6-0 Diamondbacks.
Yeah, back to back jacks for Arizona. 6-0 lead. The Reds never really threatened, but they did get a solo home run from Jonathan India in the seventh. Another solo shot from Tyler Stevenson in the ninth. But that's the way it would end. 6-2 D-backs who win a series opener for the first time since opening day.
That was one of the more remarkable stats of the season. This early season in progress is how poorly this team gets off in starts of series. And we mentioned the other day they're much better at like finagling and wrangling a victory in the last game to kind of save face. This is a good symbolic change for this team, starting with Corbin Carroll.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been saying for a while, part of the reason that Corbin Carroll's slump to begin the season, and that's putting it mildly, has a real sort of trickle-down effect is because he's sort of the catalyst for this entire offense. And lo and behold, but coincidence or not, the minute he goes deep, Ketel Marte homers right after that. as if just, okay, he just seems to electrify the lineup when he's going well.
Yeah, and look, out of necessity, Torey Lovello moved Corbin Carroll down in the lineup from the top of the lineup down to seventh, down to eighth.
Mm-hmm.
There, I mean, that didn't solve many of the issues.
Carroll has started to come around, still not producing that much. So for yesterday to be the day where Torrey Lovello says, all right, you're back at the top of the lineup, and for him to respond like that, the home run, five runs batted in, that's a stroke of genius. Here's Torrey Lovello after the game thinking that, hey, Corbin Carroll's about to break out of this thing.
I probably thought something spectacular was about to happen. Five RBIs wasn't on my bingo card, but I know that he was the right guy in the right spot. And you know, he executed to get that first one, a big base hit. Just a lot of little things went right, but the home run was a really impressive swing. So he's a good player, and you, in my opinion, things were going to start to develop for him, and I know he's going to continue to work hard to have more days like this.
Yeah, so a lot of things came together. Carroll having the big night. Zach Gallen, we were both a little bit, you know, concerned about his unavailability for almost 2 weeks. They just kept pushing him back and pushing him back and saying, no, it's not a big deal. We're being extra cautious. He was fantastic last night. And they got their closer back in Paul Sewald.
So this is a step forward. This is a step towards recovery for this baseball team. And I do agree with you about Torrey Lovello. I think Torrey could have waited until Corbin Carroll had a really breakout game and then gave him his spot atop the lineup back, or second, depending if he was doing that platoon thing like he did with Ketel Marte in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But I think that to call it and to predict it and to put him there and for it to happen is a good look for the manager. That's the sign of a guy that really has sort of the finger on the proverbial pulse, if you will.
And to hear Corbin Carroll talk about it and read his quotes, you know, he was acutely aware of what was wrong with his swing. He had flattened it out too much. You know, he was very ultra aggressive last night. He swung at the first pitch, I think, in his first three at bats. So it seems to be coming around.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I could totally relate to this, because Corbin Carroll claimed that part of the issue is he spent a good part of the offseason reworking his swing so he could attack high fastballs, which is why he leveled out the swing. So he put in all this offseason work, and he thought he was making corrections. Then he got into live action, and he couldn't stop popping the ball up. He couldn't barrel it up. And so so he didn't want to abandon what he had done until the point where, okay, let's kind of rework this, and now hopefully he's in a good place. It's the same thing if you're a golfer, and the reason I relate is this. I've done this before. I've like, okay, I'm going to change this in my golf swing because I need to add this to my golf swing. And I go on the range, and it is fantastic. And I hit three buckets of balls, and I'm like, man, I'm really getting good at this. Then I get out and play a real round of golf, and it is a disaster. And that's what happened to Corbin Carroll. It's exactly what happened to him. So I think what he did is kind of pulled back a little bit, and the lesson here is to don't tinker all the time.
Three buckets of balls. That's a lot of balls.
Small buckets, Vinny.
I got you. D-backs and Reds continue that series today, game two at Great American Ballpark. Jordan Montgomery on the mound. By the way, we're scheduled to be joined by another D-backs pitcher at 8:30 today. Ryan Nelson on the show sheet for today coming up. Also coming up, a former NBA player has started a sport versus sport war that everybody's talking about. We'll talk about it next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Luke. Are the Arizona Cardinals done making moves this offseason, or will they add another notable name before training camp begins? We get going at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports. Shut up, Jared.
All I know is I got a lot of balls.
I had to get the shout out to Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh, I tell you.
We never quote Rodney Dangerfield on this show.
No, I never do. Well, somebody's got to keep his legacy alive.
And that was not from Caddyshack. That's from Ladybugs, a terrible movie. Do you remember that movie?
I don't even know that movie.
Excellent movie.
Rodney Dangerfield gets put in charge of coaching a girls' soccer team.
All right.
And to get advanced into his...
Like a young teenage girl.
It's sponsored by his company, and he wants to move up in the company, so the success is tied to his ascension up the ladder. So he cheats, and he recruits a boy to play on the team.
It's the girl he's 90. Dating's son.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Wow. And Jack Hay is his assistant coach.
Of course, because when I think of assistant soccer coach, I immediately think of Jack Hay. Anyway. That's the kind of silliness you get on this show from time to time. Austin Rivers, former NBA player, now an NBA analyst for ESPN. He appeared on the Pat McAfee show yesterday. Forgive me, didn't watch the whole exchange, but I don't know how they got on this subject about crossover. How many NFL players could just cross over and play in the NBA and vice versa? So you have a former NBA player, you got a former NFL player, and Pat McAfee as the host.
Yeah.
Here's what Austin Rivers said.
Where the best athletes in the world are, that's us. I can take 30 players right now in the NBA and throw them in the NFL. You cannot take 30 NFL players and put them in the NBA.
It's because you only allow five on the court. Let's all relax.
It's because you get a break every play. All you got to do is catch the ball and run north or south.
Listen, our sport.
It ain't complex. So
our sport's better. Our sport's better because we would just create a position for one of you 5'2", 40, running 6'10" guys. Can't get hit much, fragile. Yeah. All right. Little thin, very. We would just create a position because we got big brains.
I am fascinated by this topic. Mm-hmm.
I personally, and I saw a lot of reaction to this, I actually think Austin Rivers is right in concept, although I don't think the number is 30. I think the idea that it would be easier to get a sampling of NBA players that could succeed in the NFL than vice versa. I personally believe in that.
NBA players to succeed in the NFL.
More likely than an NFL player succeeding in the NBA.
Obviously depending on position also in the NFL.
Yes, but I tend to believe that too, but the thing that gives me pause to say that is the physicality. I mean, football is not what it once was, but neither is basketball. And when you see the reactions of basketball players when they do receive physical contact, a lot of it is embellished. But we're also dealing with athletes in the NBA, and I'm in no position to call anybody soft or coddled. But when you see words like discomfort and soreness on injury reports, that doesn't really strike you as somebody who's ready to play the blood sport.
Right.
Am I right?
So, yeah, right. I know what you're saying. I think of NFL players, and I think about what it takes to be a good basketball player. There's a very specific skill that you need to be a basketball player, and that's the ability to handle a basketball, shoot a basketball, that kind of thing. In football, if you're big and violent, you can play the game. There are positions where you don't necessarily need to have any more skill than that. Now, and again, I'm speaking very, very broadly, and I'm not trying. I'm stating this as my opinion, not fact. So if you disagree with me, that's perfectly cool. But you look in the NBA and there's Zion. Certainly he could play somewhere in the NFL.
I don't think he could.
Really? LeBron James, Isaiah
Zion
Stewart.
Can't stand up to the physical nature of the NBA.
Well, there is that.
I mean, he can't get through an NBA season without tweaking something. Now, from a body type standpoint.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. I mean, the actions he takes in the NBA, maybe they don't take him down in the NFL. Yeah. But what were you going to say, Jared?
When Austin Rivers was talking, and when anybody makes this, they specifically mean wide receiver or maybe tight end. They don't mean like cornerback. They certainly don't mean quarterback.
Why not cornerback?
I think that's way harder than it looks. I think that's one of the hardest positions in the NFL.
Well, one of the reasons why I'm fascinated by this, and I've thought about this a lot over the years, I think for a lot of athletes, especially, and I'm talking about football and basketball players, I think they are so blessed athletically. They get to the point, it's just a matter of determining which sport they're going pro in for a lot of those guys.
Have you
seen Myles Garrett play basketball,
by the way? He's the first guy on my list of football players who could play basketball.
Now, his body type doesn't lend it, so he doesn't have a prototypical, basketball
body
type.
But he could play power forward in the NBA.
But if he slimmed down, too, he could also be a two-guard, probably. Yeah, but then another thing that throws a wrench in this whole thing, and I'm going to bring a third sport into this.
All right.
There's nothing to me that is as, and the way I see it, as basic athletically. It's probably running is first, right? Throwing. And maybe that's just an American bias because there's a lot of throwing in American sports. Did you see the footage of C.J. Stroud and Micah Parsons throwing out the first pitch at a baseball game in Japan?
I did not. Were they dreadful? Terrible?
C.J. Stroud throws a football for a living, and I know it's a different ball and it's a different
a different, I guess a different motion. Not totally different. It looked like he had never had a baseball in his hands before.
We see this
and Micah
all
Parsons,
the time,
who's
too.
One of the great athletes in all of sports, in all of football. It was dreadful what he offered up there.
Right, but these are guys you don't know if they have any baseball playing experience at all.
That's true.
And if you're suddenly handed a ball that's 1/18th the size of the ball you normally throw
and a different weight.
Right. It's like Shaquille O'Neal shooting free throws. He was terrible at it because the ball was just like too small in his hands. I don't know. Look, I think that it is a fascinating debate. I'm sure you could find outliers, but I do agree with Austin Rivers that in general the best athletes are in the NBA. Like Lou Dort.
What a dort.
He could definitely play in the NFL.
I think so. Imagine him at safety.
Ooh. He'd be like Darrell Revis, right?
You know who would have an amazing viewpoint on this? Ish Wainwright. He's been paid. He's received paychecks in both sports. Now, his football career was short. It was training camp for the Buffalo Bills. But, I mean, how many guys reach that level in that sport? And he's played basketball now for 4 years professionally.
Here's the argument I would make against any of this. There are wide receivers and tight ends who have played their entire life played football, were the best players in their high school, were the best players in college, and could not make it in the NFL. So the idea that just because somebody is athletically gifted in the NBA, they could come right into the NFL, there's obviously more to it than that. Because people who, you know, were first-round NFL draft picks don't make it in the NFL. And these are people that were the greatest at their position for their entire life.
Yeah, and then another historic example, again, bringing baseball into the mix. I mean, Michael Jordan looked like an absolute natural. Everything he did on the basketball court, you're like, wow, is there nothing this guy can't do athletically? Right. He looked very much uncomfortable and out of place playing baseball.
Yeah.
Didn't have the fluid motions of a baseball player.
Yeah, you're right. And Michael Jordan had all the rhythm in the world on a basketball court. He did. He kind of looked lanky and a little clunky on a baseball field. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. But the difference is, to me, in football, there's just many more positions where just purely being athletic and physical, you can hang. And I'm talking to both sides of the line of scrimmage. You could get that off. You could probably play some linebacker. I agree with Jared that the art of playing corner, being a cover corner, that you would have to have extensive training in technique and footwork and hip movement and all that kind of stuff.
And you have to be able to read the offenses and react to the receivers and all that stuff.
There are positions that do not translate, but I think there's more going that way than going this way. So fundamentally, even though Austin Rivers ticked off a lot of football players from Randy Moss to J.J. Watt, I think what he said carries more the ring of truth. That's just my gut feeling.
Let's get an event.
But your idea of getting Ish Wainwright's opinion on Jared, do you have his number? All those times he called in, did you think to get his phone number?
Ish, please.
And if not him, I know Brock Osweiler didn't actually play college basketball, but he was good enough to go to a top flight program. Yeah. So maybe we could get.
You know, he's 6'8".
I've heard he's very tall.
Yeah.
But then again, the other factor, I think, and this happens in both sports. We've talked about these guys, too. These athletes that are just good at everything. Everything just comes natural to them. Those are the crossover guys. But on the flip side, did you ever play or grow up with a kid that was very specialized in one sport? I went to school with a kid who was really good at basketball because he had just been brought up in the sport. Mm-hmm. But he was not athletic at all. He just knew the nuances of how to play the game. If you put him in another
skilled,
put him in another sport, you're like, oh my goodness. Have you ever seen the outside before?
That's funny. That is funny. Yeah, and I think that sports have become so specialized now, but you're right. We all grew up knowing that one person who was impossibly good in anything he tried. Those are the people we all grew up hating.
Or at least being
how do you get all of that talent?
Very envious of those
people. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Coming up next, the consensus is the Arizona Cardinals have upgraded their roster big time through free agency and the draft. Where have they improved the most? We'll give our thoughts on it next. Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.